Hello and welcome to The Thriller Zone. I'm your host, David Temple. Can you believe it's already nearly the end of 2021? Yep, and only 7 or 8 shopping days left until Christmas, and just 2 weeks until New Year's Eve. So let's all get in the festive spirit and bring on the eggnog. Okay, on today's show, I'm certain you'll dig my guest, Janosch, you can call him Jay, Neumann, former Russian counterintelligence officer and current graphic novel executive producer and creator. Ooh, that's a mouthful. We'll discuss his Red Atlantis graphic novel, who will play him in the upcoming adaptation of his work, wink, wink, and so much more. So it is time to get in the Thriller Zone.
Hello, David.
Is that you?
Yes.
Very handsome young man.
Well, young, it's not correct.
We had a little bit of this conversation via text when I was talking about the pecs and so forth. And what did you say? Something about not bad for a 40-year-old or something?
Yes, like over 40-year-old. Yes, that's correct. Yes. Yes, and I told you that the difference between the 40 and 60 in the gym, that we're just paying less attention to the girls around us. And the only reason is because we're wearing glasses. We just can't see them.
Yeah. Yeah, let me tell you a little something as we sit here in the green room getting ready to start. The shift between the 40s and the 60s is, you're in for a real treat.
Well, I guess how I feel it, your time of recovery between the takes and sets in the gym is just increasing. Like you're turning 30, it's already extra 15 minutes. Then you're going for a 40, it's another 10 or 15 minutes. And then I guess it's just going to be longer and longer.
Yes. And the same is true of having too many cocktails and staying up too late. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're enjoying them more. It's not a race anymore. It's not a competition. It's just you can just enjoy it.
Yeah, isn't it funny? Back in the day, it was like, how many of those can we have? And now it's just like, can I just enjoy one at a time? And there's no rush, no pressure.
Yeah. Yes. You just kind of, you're enjoying the time, presence, friends, conversation.
Yeah.
And it's not about the quantity. It's about the quality.
Exactly. Well, I'm jumping ahead, but now is that accent, that's Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia. Where is that?
Tennessee.
Tennessee. Oh, I was so close. So close. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, welcome to the Thriller Zone, where you are guaranteed a thrill a minute.
Perfect. Love it. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And before we get into your super unique story, which my listeners and viewers are going to love, as well as your Red Atlantic graphic novel, let's talk about things like, let's start with your background, just like youth, because I'd like to know a little bit about you that way. Where'd you grow up and how'd you meet your lovely wife, Victoria? Let's start there.
Well, was born when it was Soviet Union, 70s, right on the pike of the Cold War. So I got all this flavor of what was going on between Russia and United States. I raised during this interesting time. And then my youth, it was a collapse of the Soviet Union. So it's like I was right in the middle of the transition between the two eras, modern Russia and the Soviet Union. Right after the high school, I joined the KGB high school, which is right now is the FSB Academy. So basically, right from the school classroom, I went to the spy school. And I spent five years in the training. And my main kind of qualification it was a catch American spies. So kind of I'm like a fox catcher at first place. So then I was working as an investigator and then later on joined the operative unit. And after that, I worked as a, as an undercover inside the bank. Bank was a, sort of like a spy nest for Russian intelligence agencies and was the main platform for illegal financial operations in the name of Russian state. After that, it's multi-billion dollar operations and you guys most likely read about it, about the Deutsche Bank and such. And then later on, I left Russia due to some circumstances. And from this moment, I was helping United States agencies and their allies on international money laundering, money legalization, and unusual crimes for about 5-6 years.
Wow. I mean, as a child, did you think, you know what, I want to grow up to be a spy? A lot of guys in this country, I want to grow up to be a baseball player, an astronaut. I don't know how many people go, yeah, I want to be a spy and hunt down the bad guys.
Well, I never thought I want to be a spy. It was not the path I want to go in first place. Even like realistically, my whole family was involved in this type of business. But in people around us as well, because family and then family, friends and connections. But I thought I maybe want to be like an engineer, or I want to be maybe a journalist. I actually was in art school before, at the same time when I was in normal school, I was in art school as well. So that's maybe one, it was one of the ways where I want to go. So maybe be an artist. And then when I already was in high school, decision was made for me. So I was voluntarily forced to join the spy world. It's same thing as it was here in US in 70s and 60s. Early 80s, and same as it is in UK in 80s, 90s, and before that, I'm not sure how it is now, when the system is trying to fulfill it from within the system. So they're looking people who already have connections and ties, so you're more obligated, you more belong to them. You're like old boys club.
Right.
So that's why, yeah, that decision was made, and I can't say I had much of the choice, but yeah, that's the way I went.
And how about your wife is Victoria, right?
That's correct.
Yes. And how did you guys meet and merge your two lives? I'm just curious.
Well, I mean, maybe you can just come up on your own with that. So her favorite movie is Salt.
Oh, okay.
And she has the same training as I am. Even she's more she's more technical. She's more nerdy. She's more cyber. And she has no accent at all in English and several more languages. So yeah, she's kind of, yeah, we met during our work days.
So she's her own superpower.
Kind of, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and yes, that's why in my case, there is no way I can come up with any excuse or any, you know, way how I just can decoy any of my actions. So I have to be straightforward with her all the time. So I'm like living with a polygraph next to me. So that's it.
It's funny when you said Salt, I was switching between Salt and, is it Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was thinking, oh, you're kind of a hybrid of the two.
Yes. But it was funny when we've already been here in States and doing this work for US government, we were in Portland, Oregon. Great place, really quiet, nice. And even before the movie was released, we've been using the legend that we are consultants. And the question is like, what are you guys doing? We're consulting. So, and then in the Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I guess it was the same thing. Like, why are we just consultants?
Sure.
So that's yeah, we live this life. And but it's not that much of the action. Let's put it this way, like it was in the movie, Mr. and Mrs.
Right.
Smith.
So you don't walk around on. Go ahead.
Yeah, less glamorous. It's more normal, quiet life. Yes.
Got it. You don't have an AK-47 up underneath your arm.
No. Yeah. No, yeah. I wish, but no. Sometimes I wish, but no.
Hey, by the way, side note, I see we have, I was lurching in the shadows on LinkedIn this morning, and I see that we share a mutual connection. I don't know if you guys are friends, but David McCloskey?
Yes, I do know him, and we are connected, put it this way.
Yeah. Have you read his book, Damascus Station?
Not yet. I'm going to. I'm just still waiting for it, so... I guess David and I, we had a deal. I'm going to send him my Red Atlantis and Almost American, and I supposed to receive from him his book. So that's, but I'm just waiting on him.
Yeah.
So let me just officially throw the stone to him, to his Dallas location or wherever.
Right. He was an exceptional interview, and I'm working on a top 10 story for the end of the year. And I think that book may make the top 10. It was just a page turner. Wow.
Yes, I'm going to check it. Yes, I spoke with him several times. We're connected. I need to get his book. So that's my must have list, at least for next several months.
I'm watching this little grin behind your face, and I'm like, what is he hiding? What's the ulterior message there?
Where? I mean, this one? The small one?
That's no, a spider.
No. Which? Left? Right? Where?
Yeah, no, I was talking about your face, but see the... I ripped through your graphic novels. Let's go ahead and jump into this because I do want to know how your professional background influenced the making of Almost American, these graphic novels. I've always been a graphic novel fan, and it's interesting, and we'll go all over the place on this, but I was looking at the different, and I should be able to pull them up here, but I'll bring it up on the screen. There's a couple of different styles. Does that reflect visiting artists or various episodes?
Artists. It's all about, I mean, if Almost American, the cover pages itself, I think they're phenomenal at first place, and Russ Wooten made a really great job. His goal was to catch this atmosphere, this taste of the competition within Russia and United States, and also he knows that I'm a big fan of like classic times, let's say 60s, 70s, and that's why he was going like directly. He tried to catch this atmosphere and these images from it, and I think he nailed it. So he's there. Because I have issue one has a several different colors, one of even mosaics, so it's really right on. Almost American, it's a biopic story, put it this way. So it's basically Victoria's and my life journey. It's our life. It started in Dominican Republic with flashbacks to Russia and then what was happening here in States. Of course, it is a compressed version. And it's only about, it covers about 15 to 14 years of our life. Also, great thing about the Almost American that the writer, Ron Martz, he's a friend of ours, he's a former journalist. So he was a journalist himself. He knows how to work with live material. He's not just a creator. He's not just a great comic writer, but he's the guy who knows how to work with real stories, how to transform some facts and some narrative into something really, really cool. And then, of course, artist, it was a really hard choice because Aftershock gave us a list of the writers, artists with whom we potentially can work and copyright. And Ron's and our choice was Marco Castello. He's phenomenal. So idea was to make the story kind of as a comic book, by all means, but at the same time to have this feeling of it's a life story, it's real people. So I guess Marco, he was able to execute it. And small sneak peek, in issue 5, there will be about 7 people from real life who signed the image release form, and they will be portrayed in issue 5. They're a friend of ours. There are some my attorneys, my legal team, and my really close friends, and they will be in issue 5 of Almost American. They've got some notes, of course, from Victoria. And I told them, don't make me so masculine, don't make me like a super hero type, which they unfortunately did. So now to the book presentation, I have to catch the gym and I have to be in the same shape as my character, which is not that easy. Almost American is kind of, it's a really interesting story.
I was going to say, you can't have the graphic novel making you this super buff dude, and then you show up to your pitches and like, where'd the guns go? Where'd the beautiful chest go? Yeah.
The COVID. I mean, I have a great explanation right now. COVID. I was not able to go to the gym. I was staying at home, so no big muscles. I have to kind of, I dropped it all.
There you go. And just a side note that the issue 1 was released back in September, if I'm correct.
Correct.
2 is in October, 3 in November, and then 4 and 5 are coming soon is all I know.
Four is coming in December. I'm not sure which date it is, but 5 supposed to be released January 25th.
Gotcha. Okay. Let me back up one quick step just to make sure that I don't miss this and that my listeners aren't going, okay, well, yeah, he's Russian, he's the graphic novel. Let me make sure, because your story, I don't want to butcher the facts, your story is so layered, and I'd like to share the big story of your professional background as a former Russian NSB counterintelligence officer and how that became a graphic novel versus becoming a standard novel, fiction, thriller. Why a graphic novel? I noticed you mentioned your love of art, so I have to believe there's an influence of that. So let's start there, just to be sure I'm really crystal clear.
We thought to go the classic way, let's say, the normal way, just to make a book out of our story. We had several chats with the big publishers and people been interested, and they're still interested, but they all been asking for a happy end. They need an American happy end. Story supposed to end at some point, right? So it's supposed to be end of some journey and then beginning of the new life. In our case, it was not done yet in the moment when we've been talking to the publishers. So we had some uncertainty due to some issues which been created, unfortunately, by some U.S. Bureaucratic machine organization, which was not able to fulfill what they're supposed to do in the first place. So we decided, okay, maybe we should wait a bit, and then we can do the book a bit later, because we're still working on our story. I mean, luckily we're still alive, so which is good, and the stories keep going. It's not done yet. So we decided, okay, let's wait. And then friend of mine, Rosh Schneiderman, he is a former editor of the Newsweek, reached out to me and said that, I mean, he spoke with his friends, publishers from Aftershock Media, and they're really interested to do the graphic novel based on your journey. We've been thinking about that, and we spoke with them. And I think that was the best way to bring our story like in a short, brief, and really visual format before we can do book, because that's why we decided to go with the graphic novel. So it's really unusual thing to do the life like biopic journey inside the graphic novel. It was more like an experiment, let's say, for them as well.
Got it.
Same as for us. But I think they nailed it. And also Almost American itself is done as look at the story. It's almost seems like a TV series.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of cinematic in it. So all of this, the arch itself, how the story is placed, it's all done based on our vision, how potentially TV series or movie can be done. So yes, that's the way it was created. That's why we decided to go this way.
We're going to circle back around to that because I was talking to someone just recently, and I mentioned this probably quite too often, my background having been also involved in film, but I see every book, almost every book I read, I see as a movie, and I instantly begin to subconsciously break it down into a screenplay. And one of the things I loved about this graphic novel, besides the fact that I just dig graphic novels, it's so interesting how much story you can tell with just a single pane of graphic. There's one or two or multiple bubbles, and so you're reading the story, but that simple frame is almost as though it's telling an entire scene. It's not an actual, it's part of a scene because the scenes progress, but it infers so much that you don't have to read, and that's part of the reason I enjoy it. I mean, you wouldn't call them cartoons because a cartoon is flat and one-dimensional, and it doesn't do the same thing. I hope this makes sense. And I love the fact, back to an earlier comment you made, it has a flashback era feel about it. It doesn't feel like the modern-day graphic novel. I feel like I've gone back in time.
Yeah, and actually, that's one of the things which I really do love about the graphic novels. It's really visual. So you, in one page, it's about a chapter in a normal book. So that's how much art can tell you. Yeah. Art talks to you, and you have to use your own imagination. And art also gives you this ability. It's like in a movie. When you're watching the movie, if you really like it, if it's really well done, you're going to dive in it. And you're just watching this, and you're just part of what's going on the screen. In a graphic novel format, if it's really well done, it's the same thing. You are in it. Mm-hmm. This talks to you, and you have to not just only go through the line after line after line. No, you have to use your imagination. You are fully integrated into the process. And I guess they've been able to execute it in Almost American and Red Atlantis too, but we're going to talk about this later.
Yeah. That's interesting because Fully integrated. That's a great phrase, because you get lost in just one frame. And I find myself, you know, I want to rush ahead to read the dialogue, and yet I find myself just really admiring the scene itself. So Red Atlantis graphic novel is what you call, I don't know where I read this, a shadow parallel reality. Is that, explain that to me.
Well, I mean, the story itself, Red Atlantis, it's interesting how it was created at first place. So my wife, it was in 2017, she was working, 17, 18, she was working on some intelligence research, and she was writing about what this could be, what are the possibilities of potential misinformation, disinformation campaigns in social media, how this could affect American audience and such. And at the same time, with my friends, I have two business partners down in California, in LA, Nicholas Leeds and David Pavoni, both producers and writers. We've been working on a documentary TV series concept called Red X. It's about this crazy Soviet experiments from 1920s up to like 90s. It's similar to American program MKUltra. So LSD, all this crazy mind reading stuff, all of this, it's like nuclear punk type of experiments. And which we try to kind of to make it as a TV series, a documentary ones. And one day my wife, she asked me like, what do I think about some notes she put on a paper? And I had this both documents on my table, on my desk. And at some point, I just like, why we can't just merge it? Let's make something really cool out of it. Like, we can bring this real intelligence research and data and mix it with all these crazy stories from the Cold War era. And I started to work on it. And Red Atlantis was born, basically. And then my partner, Nicholas Leeds, he joined me on the writing process. We created about like 55-page manuscript as a Bible. We created the whole, this underworld, this parallel reality. Like, you have United States, you have Russia, and between them you have this like a hidden, we can't say it like deep state. It's more as a deep spy organization. It's called Red Atlantis. They are followers of this crazy idea that the whole world's supposed to be destroyed and new humanity should be born from the remains, like for the fire. More as like Trotsky ideas, put it this way, like crazy completely. And they have this network of the spies, sleeper cells all around the U.S. and Western Europe. Their mothership is Russia, but only reason because it was really easy to take for them after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Like, they kept this agenda from 1920s and 30s. Then they've been purged, and then but they still exist in the shadow world, and then they appear again in 90s. So we created this all, we put it on a paper. And that's how Red Atlantis actually was born. So we wrote it. We've got a pitch document, which was really torture for me when we've been cutting off all these crazy ideas and just try to compress them in 10-page document. And that was painful. I was fighting for every line. But we did it, and we submitted again to the Aftershock, and they almost immediately said, yes, let's do it. And they found us a writer. And then we started to work with Stephanie Phillips. She's a writer. She's amazing. And artists. Guys, just to make this story. Interesting thing about Red Atlantis, we try to put as much as possible real scenarios, how this could be. Of course, we turn them into the sci-fi mode. It's like the X-Files, for example.
Sure.
Or so things like that. But at the same time, you can see there are lots of like real scenarios which could be there. Like, let's say, for example, the book is starting from the attack of this Red Atlantis spies on operatives on the voting station in Texas. Mm-hmm. So it's reality, like how you can affect the election process. So you need to create some kind of a diversion, maybe some... Even bloody diversion, but still something. So we started from this moment, and then there is some protests. You can see that what's going on in like in next to the FBI building. There are some assassinations. There are some chasing. And then FBI guys who are coming on the scene, and they have no idea what's going on, and they're really chasing the innocent person because they're just following the books, following the instructions, the rules. So there are lots of the real stuff from real life, from real experience, and also we use this power of the creator. We some of the, let's put it this way, some of the characters inside the story, they do have real prototypes. The way how they look, the way how they act, the way who they are, the way they are making decisions, they do have real prototypes. So everything, like Red Atlantis is loaded with the some predictions, some intelligence stuff. It's, yeah, it's what I can say about this.
So it's bordering on, well, reality, but a dangerous reality, so to speak. And some of that stuff you were saying earlier about Texas and voter fraud, and stuff, that's pure fiction, isn't it?
Completely. Yeah. Completely. Just, yeah, no, that's no comments just... on that. You even look at the cover page of the Red Atlantis. It was released in December 2020, I guess the day of the election. And if you look at the cover page of the story, we decided not to put the White House, we put the Capitol Hill in it. And you can see this really kind of really extremely strange activity right next to it. So, and then after what happened later on, we have a bunch of the, I had a bunch of the messages from friends who've been asking, like, how guys, how did you know about what is coming? How did you know what could happen? But we kind of, when we've been working on this, we try to create as a crazy scenario as possible, what this could be. Like, what if stories and all these theories, conspiracy theories about the deep state, about this deep network of the foreign sleepers inside the unit is true? What if it's true? What if Soviets been able to achieve their dream of creating this spies with the paranormal abilities? What if it's true? What if it happened? So we've been I'm here on East Coast, and my friends guys on West Coast in LA, and we've been working developing some stuff via normal Zoom calls. So we just have this conversation. And once it was really funny moment, we've been talking about how potentially we can attack the FBI building, how we can destroy some amount of people, how we just create some kind of a diversion, how we can avoid the surveillance and counter-surveillance and all these kind of crazy things. And I didn't notice, I was sitting in my headphones and I was speaking out loud to the camera. But I didn't notice that our neighbors, they've been on their deck with their family and friends, and they heard all of that.
Oh. So,
and they had no idea what I'm talking about. They didn't know that I'm writing the book. So they, like, when I turned after I was done, I just, I closed my laptop and I turned on the back and I saw them. They just turned immediately outside, like on a different direction. They just decided, like, they, I don't exist even. So that when the book was published 6 months after that, like released, I gave them a book and I explained what this was about. Because they were shocked. Like people thought that we are planning some crazy things. They had no idea that we're working on a script or working on some kind of a crazy idea. No, they really thought that we are some kind of a bad guy. I'm not sure they reported me or not, but they thought we're crazy people.
Well, I was waiting for you to tell me that, a dozen soldiers showed up in full gear, SWAT gear, and black head to toe with AK-47s coming at you. But that was not the case. That's hilarious. You really are living the dream. I mean, you're taking your background and your political leanings and your research and your security observation, your consultancy, and now you're weaving it into a medium that is acceptable to all people. I mean, it's really totally cool.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but entertainment industry itself, it has less hypocrisy and it's more fair than work for the government. Because look, here's my view, my 5 cents. I've been working for both governments on both sides of the pond. In work for the government, everyone is saying you can't lie, you should say the truth all the time, we're doing the good things. Reality, you know, is completely opposite from what they've been saying. In showbiz, you know, it's all about the lies. It's about the creating the bubble. It's part of the game, and you know it. And no one is trying to hide it. From this view, point of view, that's more fair business than work for the state, for the government, by all means. And it's really big competition. It's hard. There are lots of people trying to achieve a lot of things. You know, it's a lot of, I'm not sure I can say this word, sort of bullshit in this industry too.
Yeah,
but reality is it's more fair. And it's more interesting and it's more forgiving than any other business. You just can do your thing. You just can come up with any crazy idea you want, as long as you can find the right person who can support you with that and who can just follow you, that's fantastic. That's all in your hands. Of course, you need some luck, but overall, it's I'm really enjoying what I'm doing.
Yeah,
it's really great. And plus, the background, the training itself is really helpful. Creating characters, you're doing the basic profiling. It's the way you've been trained, the same thing. Telling this story, just like you work in operative materials, you're just creating this stuff.
Yeah, it really is. People ask all the time, ask authors. I ask authors on the show constantly about, you know, point of view and how much they enjoy it. But we really do have the ultimate gig. We get to create worlds out of thin air and make you enjoy the ride. And I can't think of anything much better than that. I was back to LinkedIn comment. I see that you're basically a consultant and have been a consultant for quite some time in a lot of different avenues, and also co-founder, executive producer of 3NJ Kino Lab, which is basically the heat behind these graphic novels. What is a average day, without getting too personal or too in-depth, just because, you know, the word consultant is often an umbrella phrase that is, when you said this earlier, it made me think you're either a consultant or you're in sales. No, what I mean is, if you say either one of those things, it could be 100 different things.
Yeah, it's pretty much it. I'm in touch with several guys, quite several guys, people who are their former US government officials. So they work in, like, the guys from the FBI agency and other organizations. They have their own private security firms and companies, sometimes they need some help, let's say some research or do some work on some basic analytical work. So I'm working as a subject matter expert. Depends upon what they need, what they're looking for. Specifically, at the same time, I'm almost 24/7 involved in what we're trying to do with my company, with my guys, with the entertainment projects. Besides these two graphic novels, which have been released already, we're developing one on our own right now without a publisher. We just found a private investor, and it's a revenge thriller. We have Ron Martz, who's writing this, and we have Jason Masters, the really amazing artist, the guy who just recently finished the James Bond graphic novel. He's working with us on this project, and we hope this project will be released next year, June, July. We have several documentary projects. So on my daily base, I'm always involved in some process, some creative process. Of course, the best one, since when we call it like a writer's table, is pretty normal. When we have several people we're just discussing from these ideas before we're going to put them all on a paper.
So Aftershock, it calls all the shots on Almost American, which means like movie deals, record deals, etc. They put the money out into publication, promotion, advertising, etc. You get a little piece of the action. Whereas if you self-publish, like I do currently, you have to do more work, perhaps, but you get a larger piece of the pie. So with your new project, you are completely self-financed, so you get to control everything, basically. Is that...
It's all about the creative control. Yes, at some in most of the cases, but at the same time, we have to put all our time and the money in it as well. So when we've been working Almost American and Red Atlantis with the Aftershock, I can't give you the percentage, but it's like deal with the publisher. So you almost have like equal shares in the project. They are fully responsible for printing, for bringing on board a writer and the artist. But of course, they're discussing this with you. So you have options. You can pick with whom you want to work. As for Red Atlantis, for example, I've been staying on the project from the day one till the moment it was released, because we've been in touch with Stephanie. She had a full creative freedom, but at the same time, she was working on notes which we gave to her, like our Bible of the story. So as for the project we're working on right now with Ron and Jason, Ron is a writer. He has a freedom as well. But at the same time, we are fully involved in this creative process, because it's our project, our ideas, and our money on the line as well. Realistically, if we do Valhalla, when we release Valhalla, it will be 100% ours, except then you have to share lots of money with the Comixology, for example, or Diamond, which is not great, but it's the way it is. You're losing a lot, because it's like a Comixology, it's Amazon. So, and you know the deals with Amazon. So you
I know it well. Yeah.
Well, and the distributor, same thing as well. So you're losing a lot just to be able to work with them.
It's so funny because there is a point where you go, like, this is going to be a little bit esoteric. If I'm going to build a house, I'm going to need concrete, wood, nails, etc., paint, you know. If there are 10 vendors and each vendor has a sub-vendor and a sub-sub-vendor, that markup continues to grow. Let's forget about the fact that there's shortages and all that other stuff. So you have so many hands in the particular pie. However, this is random, if you have your own forest, you have your own this, and you cut down your own trees and so forth, so that profit becomes more in your pocket. Part of that is the price of doing business, and you don't want to have to go make all that infrastructure investment in order to be able to have a graphic novel. But on the other side, I think people don't fully appreciate just how much work it takes and how little money is made in the big picture. Would you say that's true?
Yes. It's just pure examples. Just to write down the story of Red Atlantis, it took us about a year just to create the whole story, the world itself. Then it took about a year to Stephanie and the Aftershock to turn these ideas into the graphic novel. So it's 2 years of production or just nonstop work. And then it's another year to release it all. So from issue 1 to issue 5, plus the paperback edition. So 5 and 1, which was on sale right now at Barnes & Noble. It's about 2 years and 8 months. Total. So yeah, it's a lot of labor hours. It's a lot of money invested. It's actually, it's a pretty big investment on financial part as well, just to make one book. So without the printing, it's about $85,000.
Wow.
Just to make a 100 page graphic novel. If you want to go in high quality with the perfect artist, perfect writer, colorist, letterers, so that's a lot. That's right.
My dog has figured out how to open the door with his paws, and I don't know how he did that. So I'm gonna have to handcuff him on shows from now on. Please forgive me for that interruption.
No worries at all. So yeah, that's pretty expensive. So make one book without the print is pretty expensive process, and it's a long process as well because you have to be careful, like, and precise with the details. If you want to choose the right artist and a writer, that's another hell of a ride. You just, because so many talented people around you, but you should be sure that they can really execute what you want to have, because you have your own vision in your head as a creator of the story. And with my partners, we spent several weeks just to pick the proper artist.
I want to make sure I got that number right. You said would you say this is a standard graphic novel, 100 pages or less, is 85 grand.
It's without print. It's without print. It all depends upon whom you want to have as a writer and the artist, because they have different grades and paychecks. If it's an A-list writer, A-list artist, then yes. If you want to go as big as possible, then it's really, really expensive.
So this leads me to my next question, which is, I know this is a passion project. It's a love. You're a consultant over here. You're a graphic novel designer, executive producer. Do you think, and do you want to eventually get to a point where that's your sole media, is your sole energy?
I think so, yes. And also graphic novels, our main goal is to make a deal on a movie and TV, which is, I guess, the holy grail for everyone who is doing the graphic novels, because that's the best way to do it. Also, graphic novels, graphic novel itself, if you look at this, it's already good to go pitch for movie and TV. It's all visual.
Storyboard's already done.
Yeah, that's all done. It's all in it. You can support it with the maybe 4-page story. Small deck explanation, like pitch, which is more than enough as well. The executive not going to read more than 4 pages, so you write on, and then the rest is visual. We felt that, okay, we have so many crazy scripted ideas. What's the best way to do it? Just to write down it into the Bible, then do the pitch, and then maybe go and pitch around to the networks and spend another 20 years trying to sell it. which is most common situation, not going to work. So it's a lot of labor and almost no money. If you do the graphic novel, there is a possibility you can refund yourself because that's a product you already can put on the market. It's still something, and it's already secured IP, secured story, and actually it's ready to go. And most likely it's going to catch some attention. Maybe you have some fans and followers, people who love this story. So that's all, at some point, it's a moneymaker. It's some kind of refund of your time, your labor, and your creativity. So it's at some point. But as for entertainment, yes, I want to stay in this line. I'm looking for some opportunities to work as a consultant side in the movie industry as well, because the way Hollywood and some other guys are portraying the guys from my former organization is ridiculous. I want to change it. So like, look, some of the spies, American spies right now, guys are saying, hire us, we can help you to portray the right spies in the movie and TV. So same thing about the bad guys. Come on, stop showing them as a complete dummies or just a big, like a goons. No, you have to, if you want to, that's actually more interesting if you show people and your enemies and your guys as the way they are. It's more entertaining. It's more scary. It's
absolutely,
this is going to show you how intense and hard this work is. If you have someone who is not look like a spy, not act as a spy, running around and killing of dozens of the guys who are like 6'4" with the 240 pounds, and that's not true. Like, come on, that's just not even, it's impossible even to watch it.
Yeah,
I'm more than happy to help Hollywood to make the bad guys look like a bad guys.
Yeah, you can bend reality, but don't try to break it. Yeah,
yes,
because it's insulting.
It is, and it's insulting, and it's basically killing the idea of the show, of the movie, if something really looks ridiculous. Even the plot is great, the story is great, but then after all, you have something which is completely unfit in it, which is not real, which is far away from any common sense. That's not the way things should be done.
So really, basically, if I just stroked you a big check for a few million dollars, we could be on our way. Is that what you're saying?
What do you mean?
let me find my checkbook, and we'll just get this party started. I mean, come on now.
Yeah,
nothing I love better than to do it. Now, all joking aside,
yep.
Since movies have always been, the holy grail, however, movies have taken a hit due to COVID, et cetera, I think TV shows and series has, especially in the streaming world, has really created a much bigger, broader opportunity. And would you prefer, let's say perfect case scenario, a streaming situation where you could create a big stack of one, you know, you could do hypothetically Almost American, Red Atlantic, Jimmy Crack Corn, and just put those various series out and, you know, feed the machine, because you're going to spend about the same amount of money.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. I mean, matter of fact, Aftershock is right now pitching Red Atlantis for TV series to the streaming platforms and networks. And this is one of the destinations where I want to go. And look, if your show is air in on the screen for 10 years, for example, if you can just season after season after season, that's fantastic. That's everyone is looking for. You're busy, you're occupied, you're making the great credit, you're making good money as well.
Yeah.
And this is kind of, you can see the result of your work.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. The streaming platforms right now are booming, and people are spending more time sitting in their chairs and sofas and couches and just watching this, surfing for the Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, this is a perfect tee up as we begin to wrap the show. Perfect tee up for our feature called Rapid Fire Questions. I'm sure if you've heard the show, you're familiar with it. And number one's going to be a layup because we just talked about it, and that is this. If you could turn Almost American into a TV series, who would play the leads? I mean, since you acted in TV's Grimm and the TV movie, Plot Against America, it's a two-part question. Would you and your wife play the roles? Or if you didn't want to do that because it was too much to take off. Who would be that dream lead?
I'm more as a guy from 80s and 90s. So I guess people whom really I do love and admire, they won't be able to play me. They need some younger actress who can do it. I don't know. That's a good question. I can give you like a really funny story. We've been in Philadelphia working with the local FBI guys on some organized crime. And it was an FBI agent. His name, no last name, but let's call him Grady. So the tall guy, he's about 6'3", like over 220 pounds.
Okay.
He's been going and working out with me. Once we've been going at night from the bar, and he leaned to me and said, like, Jay, look, if at some point you do movie based on your story, can you please ask Tom Cruise to play me? I said, well, look, if at some point we can make Almost American into the movie, I would definitely going to ask Tom Cruise to play someone at least, or not Grady maybe, but at least someone in this in the show.
As you're crafting the story, you always think, oh, blank would make a great lead. Oh, blank would make a great accomplice. All right, question number two, much easier. What's your favorite cocktail?
Lumumba.
Wait a minute.
I know you don't know what that. So we've been in the Dominican Republic, before our extraction by agency, and we've been hiding like among the surfers and the kite surfers community. So the day we arrived at the Dominican Republic, my wife and I, we went to the local kiting like and surfers shop. We just get rid of all of our fancy clothes. We've ended up in some Rip Curl and other things, like look like the local guys. Then a few days on a beach, you tanned,
sure.
And you just can look like the guys, local guys. So anyways, a local dive bar for surfers, they had a cocktail called Lumumba. That was a killer machine. It was milk, chocolate, vodka, Kahlua, and rum, and some other things. It's all mixed together, and ice cream. So this thing is delicious, but it's going to kill the elephant. So like after the glass, you're almost done.
And not to be too graphic, but boy, if you had too many of those, that next morning would not be fun.
Yes.
All right, number three, it's very random. It's going to be a little bit of a challenge, but you've just been asked as an executive producer to develop a Broadway musical about your life. What would you call this Broadway musical and who would play you? So it's a little bit of number one, but it's something so esoteric as a Broadway musical.
That's good. How are we going to call it? Something with a few words, like a cold songs of themes of songs from the cold.
Uh-huh.
Let's say like they're related to my background. I'm not sure that that's proper or not.
Yeah.
And then whom to play, Johnny Depp, I guess that's one of the best choices in this case, or Charlie Sheen. I guess that would be, he's one of my favorite actors ever. So
Johnny Depp or Charlie Sheen?
Yes, that's correct.
Either one of those are your favorite ones?
Yeah, I can between them two. Yeah. That's I love both the guys. I mean, they are sarcastic. They are really good on camera. They are always bringing something new.
All right, last one. It's the last one, but it's a goodie. You and Victoria are joining my wife Tammy and I here in San Diego for a sit-down dinner. You get to invite two more people to round it out for six. They can be living or dead, although they will be living at the party. Who would they be? You get to pick them, and why? Man or woman, living or dead?
Sandra Bullock. Mm-hmm. She's alive, and she's my favorite actress. As for male characters, I have two options. One, I guess, in my case, it's Robert De Niro.
Oh.
Yes, and especially with Meeting with the Parents when he played the ex-CIA guy. That's fantastic. And the second is John Malkovich.
Yeah,
he's one of the, I guess he's among the top five my backers right now in Hollywood, always was, and he is. His character in the movie Red, that's the best.
All right. Well, Jay, folks can follow you, I know, on Twitter at Janosch Neumann or Janosch Neumann. And you know what? There's a good point about the social media. Luke McCallan was talking to me recently, and he said, we were talking about social media. He goes, you know, I can't do it like you do it. I just don't have the time or the energy or the desire somewhat as well. And it does take a lot of work. And I often wonder, this is going to sound a little both sides of my mouth, but I sometimes wonder if that time is better spent on creating reality in the form of projects, books, etc., more so than just putting your stuff out there. And I know a social platform is necessary, but I don't know that I'm completely sold yet, you know?
I don't know, too. That's a good question. Look, and also, it's hard to ask people with my background and sort of my background and people from the spy intelligence, counterintelligence world about the social media due to we always been told that don't go to the social media. Avoid it. So for us, now it's more necessary tool to promote what we do and who we are. But if, look, if I wouldn't be in the entertainment industry, I would never be in social media by all means.
Right.
And what you do with the Thriller Zone, it's a lot of work. You have to interview people. You have to prepare. You have to read all of these crazy books and stories and just kind of put it through you, analyze this, put some questions on a paper, prepare to the conversation. Some people not really great with English like I am, so it's going to be an additional torture for you just to go through it. So it's a lot of work, preparation work, and then editing, and then just release it, and then do it again, again, and again. So social media, it's necessary, and it's really tough, and you should have a special talent to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And I guess you have it. So that's why kind of you can find people who can interview. That's not a problem at all. But the question is, do you want to do it? Are you sure they can execute it? Are you sure they can make it? Are you sure they are really interested in you and in the story you're trying to do?
Yeah.
So that's a big difference. And I guess you among only a few people who are able to do it.
Thank you. It is funny on your note this morning. Hey, are we going live or recording? I'm just curious. And I'm like, oh, recording. Good. So I can have other takes if necessary. And I'm like, it's going to be fine. Trust me. That's why you're working with me. And did you find yourself? Was this effortless and fun and thrilling?
Yeah, it's nice. And that's what I said. Like, I already had quite a few podcasts and interviews. Some of them went really smooth, like today. And it's all about this vibe. It's about this communication. It's like an acting or basically operative game as well. Right. When you're recruiting someone or talking to someone, you have to build this bridge, this communication. This would be exchange of these emotions and the thoughts. Are you in this conversation? All this could be really plain and cold. So here you feel you are involved. You are interacting and you are part of this conversation. You're not just only the subject of the interview. They just need your opinion. No. And I'm really enjoying this. That's why it's fantastic. It's great. And it's really, really comfortable.
Well, you're very kind with those compliments. And this has been wonderful, Jay. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. And I guess I owe you physical graphic novel, the books itself. So I'm going to send it to you.
That would be wonderful. I ripped through the PDFs, but you know, I usually tell people, please send me hard copy, because if I see it stacked in front of me, it's a way better chance that I'm going to read it.
Nowadays, people less and less reading books, especially younger generation. They're more about, because life is faster than it was at least like even 10 years ago, right?
Oh yeah.
So it's more like clip thinking. It's more about the really browsing for the stories. And the graphic novels, if you look at this, they can give you a chance just to go through the story, catch your attention. If you really love it, you're going to buy a book later on. So maybe graphic novels is more like a bridge between the story and a book. So it's right in the middle.
That's a really great example. And another thing that has grown prolifically, and they're saying will continue to grow at an exponential rate, like surpassing ebooks, is audiobooks. And I don't know how a graphic novel would translate. However, I would be certainly willing to try.
I think because of the new technologies, lots of people right now are multitasking. So they're doing some work at the same time listening music.
Yeah.
Or they can do some work and they can listen to a podcast. You're driving in the car instead of just listening to music. You just can put the audio version of the book or audio version of some interview without a video in it. And I guess graphic novels, because of the new technology, You don't have to buy the book physically right now. You can just download the copy. Right. You have high-resolution cell phones, tablets, computers, whatever, just name it.
Yeah, you've given me a good idea. I'm going to reach out to more graphic novelists and have them on the show because I can get through things twice the speed.
Well, I can connect you with Ron Martz if you want.
Please do.
Yes, that's easy. I can do it. Ron would love to do it as well.
All right. Awesome. Well, Jay, I got to bounce to give you your time and get cutting on the show. But once again, it is Jay Neumann and the book or a graphic novel, Almost American. And boy, I wish you huge success. I don't think you need big wishes because I think it's going to happen, but I give it to you anyway.
I hope. We need it. We all need it.
Yes,
your
sir.
Words to God's ears, as we say it.
Yes.
It's going to happen. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jay.
How cool was listening to the espionage and intrigue of Jay's background? And I think his graphic novels may make for great stocking stuffers. Just saying. Well, folks, I still have two shows to air before we close out the year. You'll hear from Chris Swan, author of Fire in the Night. It's good. And I have a special year-end guest, the lovely and talented Tammy Temple, as we do a year-end review. Also, I'm excited to announce that January marks season 2. And we'll start the year right with several heavy hitters that include, check this out, the legendary Ace Atkins, the superstar writing duo of Andrews Wilson, megawatt hit writer John Gilstrap, and the internationally known New York Times bestseller J.D. Barker. Wow, that's a way to kick off 2022. And as I wrap, could you do me a small favor and take 3 minutes, maybe 2 minutes, to leave us a review either on thethrillerzone.com, on Apple Podcast, or right there on our YouTube channel, David Temple Author. Like, it's easy and does so much to help our show, especially 5-star reviews. Hint, hint. Okay, get out there and finish your last-minute holiday shopping and focus on staying healthy. I'm David Temple, and I'll see you next time on The Thriller Zone.